This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
2 centuries later, mystery continues to surround the death of Meriwether Lewis in 1809. Did the famous explorer commit suicide, or was he assassinated? The new book, The Death of Meriwether Lewis, is an unforgettable tale of political corruption, assassins, forged documents, and skeletal remains. Author Kira Gale joins me on the long line, and she is coming to Charlottesville. She will be at New Dominion Bookshop on Thursday, the day after tomorrow, at 12:15 p.m. in the afternoon. So a wonderful thing to do on your lunch break. Go see Kira Gale at New Dominion, Virginia's oldest bookstore, right there on the downtown mall at 12:15 on Thursday. Kira, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We want to, in advance, welcome you to Charlottesville. We hope you have a great trip and a wonderful stay here, and I'm sure a lot of folks will be coming out to meet with you and talk about this unbelievable subject, which I have to say at the very beginning, I was most struck by the fact that the contention that he was murdered and that it wasn't suicide is not new. I mean, this at the time, a lot of folks thought it was murder. So, but before we get there, remind us who is or who was Meriwether Lewis?
Well, Meriwether Lewis was a native of not Charlottesville, though I think of it that way, Albemarle County. His home is still standing, Locust Hill, there's a Locust Grove in Louisville.
Yeah, right over there on Owensville Road, right in Ivy, yep.
Yep, there's a marker there, and the family graveyard is there. Meriwether Lewis grew up in that house with his mother, who was widowed, and there's an exhibit about her at University of Virginia that I hope to see when I come to town, Lucy Marks. She was an herbalist. She gathered plants for medicinal uses, and she taught her son this. Lewis was a great naturalist. He grew up roaming the woods, and he joined the Army when he was 18 for adventure. Served in the Army for 10 years. And in 1801, President Jefferson, immediately upon taking office, asked Meriwether Lewis to come to Washington and be his personal assistant, or secretary, as he was called. So Lewis spent 10 years on the Western frontier as a young Army officer, and then, still retaining his Army commission, he went to D.C., and he lived in the East Room of the White House, working for Jefferson. It seems pretty likely that from that time on, they were planning the expedition because it was a dearly held ambition of both of them to explore the continent. And Jefferson sent a secret message to Congress and got approval for Lewis to go out with just a small group of 13 men. But before it actually happened, the group had grown to about 30 men, and Lewis asked William Clark to be his co-captain.
So let's fast forward. They have the Corps of Discovery, goes out, has amazing adventures that we all learned about in school. And we also learned when we were in grade school that when they got home, shortly thereafter, Meriwether Lewis committed suicide, staying at a little inn or a hotel somewhere, that he was an alcoholic and he was depressed. So tell us the story, that story that we learn in grade school about what happened, and then we'll ask you what you think really happened.
Okay, but let's go back a little bit, because that's generally how the story is told. You get the Lewis and Clark expedition, then you get the fact that he's depressed and neurotic, and he commits suicide, and there's no story in between. Well, there's a big story in between, and it has to do with his accomplishments and also with the motive for what I think was his assassination. When he came back in 1806 with the expedition, the Aaron Burr filibuster expedition to invade Mexico was coming down the Ohio and Mississippi River. just at the time that the Lewis and Clark expedition was coming home. And it was a national commotion. It was a huge thing that Burr was on his way, and nobody knew what, how many men were going to join him, what was happening. There was alarm all over the country. And James Wilkinson, the commanding general of the army, was part of the plot. But Wilkinson betrayed Aaron Burr. This is all as the expedition is coming home. So Lewis and Clark go on to Washington and to report to Jefferson. And at the time that they arrive in Washington, say in January of 1807, Aaron Burr is on the lam. He's evading capture. He's the former vice president of the United States. He's killed Alexander Hamilton, the treasurer of the United States. He had planned an invasion of Mexico in cooperation with General Wilkinson. All of this was huge news. The Lewis and Clark expedition must not have gotten a lot of attention from anybody. Well, Aaron Burr was captured in February of 1807. And in March of 1807, Meriwether Lewis accepted the appointment of governor of Louisiana Territory, based in St. Louis. General Wilkinson, the commanding general of the army, had had a joint appointment, and he was also the governor of Louisiana Territory. Well, he's considered one of the, the greatest traitor and scoundrel in American history. And in the 1 year that he had been governor of Louisiana Territory, he had created so much turmoil and mischief through corruption and land deals that they removed him from office to be replaced by Meriwether Lewis. So Lewis was going into a real trouble spot.
He was going into a hornet's nest to replace a corrupt guy.
Right, right. And the people that supported Aaron Burr were called Burrites. Well, Lewis's first assignment was to root out suspected Burrites from positions of power and influence in St. Louis. And the place was crawling with them because everybody out west wanted to get in on land deals and, you know, had expansionist ideas. St. Louis had a lot of Burrites, but it was his job to take them out of power. And the most notorious one was called John Smith Tee. He was a big land speculator, very wealthy. He had killed 15 to 20 men in duels. People were afraid of him. And he was speculating and using thugs and private armies to take over the lead mines south of St. Louis. Well, lead mines were important because that was bullets. And the lead mines south of St. Louis were the richest in the world. So this was, the government had taken over control of the lead mines.
So Jefferson, it's your contention that Jefferson, by appointing Meriwether Lewis to be the new governor of the Louisiana Territory, and this is, of course, following in the wake of the Corps of Discovery expedition, part of his motivation, Jefferson's motivation, was to sort of clean up the corruption in St. Louis. It was, you know, worse than Chicago.
You got it.
So he sends Meriwether Lewis in there, arguably the ethical, clean governor. But your contention is that he walked into a hornet's nest and he was assassinated by the corrupt guys who were still there.
You got it. That's exactly right.
We're talking with historian Kara Gale. She's coming to Charlottesville the day after tomorrow, Thursday, May 28th. She'll be at New Dominion Bookshop on the downtown mall at 12:15 p.m. for a talk and signing. We're also giving away a free copy of her fascinating new book at the end of this interview, and it is signed. So if you're listening, stay with us if you're interested in a copy. So, Kara, take us now to the scene of the murder. What happened, and why is it that some people believed at the time that it was a suicide?
Okay, well, I think what happened, I spent about a year seriously looking into the history behind this because I had always felt that he was murdered. That's a fairly common belief among historians. not the current crop of historians, but before it has been. And I wanted to find out a motive. Well, the lead mine district was one thing. The government owned it. They were only leasing it. People wanted control of it because they wanted lead for bullets. They wanted to invade Mexico again. And I believe Lewis was in trouble with the government refusing to honor bills that he had personally guaranteed as governor of the territory. All of a sudden, he was being refused payment on about $2,500 worth of bills, including $1,600 for paying for the printing of the territorial laws of Louisiana. It was crazy. So he was going to go to Washington and clear up matters and get his bills honored. When he set off, he also was sick with malaria. He'd been subject to severe bouts with malaria for many years. Most people were back in that time. He was, of course, mad and a bit discouraged, but he was a fighter, and he was going to Washington to straighten out these matters, and they obviously would be, and they were after his death. He took his dog, and he had a servant with him, who was a servant that had worked in the White House. So he sets off, and when he gets to Memphis, Tennessee, he decides to go overland instead of go by boat down to New Orleans. And when he's at Memphis, he stops at Fort Pickering, where he's sick with malaria for a few days, but he's nursed back to health. Well, we begin to hear stories from this time on, letters and rumors that he tried to commit suicide coming downriver, that he was mentally deranged, that he was depressed, all kinds of things. Nobody said that except after the fact or right around the time of his death. And the captain at the fort wrote letters to President Jefferson after Lewis died, and he never mentioned that there were prior suicide attempts as he was coming downriver, or that he was emotionally disturbed. He said he was sick, and he nursed him back to health, and then he waited at the fort for 8 days because the captain also had bills that weren't being paid, and he wanted to go to Washington with Lewis.
Hmm.
Well, that was denied. And Lewis was set off with an Indian agent who mysteriously had stayed around the fort, just hanging around for days. And when Captain Russell said that he wanted to send his own man, the Indian agent who worked for Wilkinson said no, he'd take Lewis. So Lewis and James Neely, the agent, and Neely's servant and Lewis's servant, and the dog, nobody mentions the dog, but we do have some evidence about this. And of course he would have been with him, because he always was. They set off, and they go on the Natchez Trace. Then, on the night of October 10th, Lewis has gone on alone on the trace with the two servants, and James Neely has stayed behind because some horses have disappeared. So Neely, this is now everything that we hear is secondhand. And Neely says that he stayed behind looking for the horses, and Lewis and the two servants went ahead, and they were to go to Mrs. Grinder's stand, or it's like a motel or traveler's inn. So Lewis goes to Grinder's stand on the Natchez Trace near today's Hohenwald, and on the night of October 10th, 11th, he dies.
We're talking with historian Kira Gale. Her new book is The Death of Meriwether Lewis, a Historic Crime Scene Investigation. She'll be discussing the new book at New Dominion Bookshop on Thursday at 12:15 in the afternoon, so make sure you go on out and say hello. Kira, I thought it was interesting. I never knew this, but, you know, I just was raised being told that, Meriwether Lewis shot himself at a little motel somewhere traveling to Washington. But in fact, there were multiple gunshot wounds, and you never hear about multiple gunshot wounds on a suicide victim.
We don't even know, because that's one of the reasons we want to exhume the body. We are told by James Neely, who has a lot to hide and a lot to conceal. He writes a letter to President Jefferson after the death, but he doesn't even... Lewis dies on October 11th at Grinder's Stand. Now, that is where the National Monument and Gravesite is located today.
He was buried there, right?
He was buried there the next day. He's the governor of the territory. He's the president's friend. And they just put him in a shallow grave. They don't put a fence around it. It's terrible.
Kara, tell me about these efforts now to exhume the body and bury him elsewhere. What is this all about?
Well, that's the important thing. I'm going to be joined at the bookshop by my co-author, James Starrs. And Professor Starrs is a professor of forensic science and law at George Washington University. He's exhumed... the bodies of several historical figures, like Jesse James, to determine the cause of death. He got interested in Meriwether Lewis's death back in the early 1990s, and in 1996, he invited his friends, who are very big-name crime scene investigators representing all different disciplines, to join him at Lewis County, Tennessee, where they held an official coroner's inquest into the death of Meriwether Lewis. And these experts testified as to what would happen if the bones were dug up, what could be found, would they be in reasonable condition, what was the soil like, things like suicide psychology, gunshot wound analysis, firearms, and document examination. He had two document examiners, and he found out that one of the key documents supporting the suicide theory was a forgery.
Mm. Hey, if the government does allow the body to be exhumed, do the experts believe that you'll be able to look at what is left of Meriwether Lewis and definitively say what they think, that it was a suicide or a murder?
Yes, they do. And more than that, Lewis was exhumed once before in 1848 when they built the National Monument over his grave. And when they did that, the official monument committee of the state of Tennessee issued a report. And they said, though it's commonly believed that Lewis committed suicide, it is more probable that he died by the hands of an assassin.
Wow. And when was that?
Yeah.
When was that?
That was 1848.
Oh, my gosh.
And then in 1924, when the state of Tennessee applied for national monument status, national landmark, they wrote in the letter to President Calvin Coolidge that it was murder.
Wow. Amazing. The book is The Death of Meriwether Lewis, and you can learn more online at deathofmeriwetherlewis.com. Co-author Kira Gale will be in Charlottesville the day after tomorrow at the New Dominion Bookshop for what promises to be a fascinating discussion about this subject, perhaps America's oldest cold case. She'll be here on Thursday at 12:15.
Don't forget, James Starrs will be there too.
Both authors of the book will be in Charlottesville on Thursday. Kira, it's fascinating, a fascinating story, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.